If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Welcome back to Gabbing with Gib. I'm your host, Gibson Johns, and today on the show, we're discussing the precarious status of the reality TV villain, particularly on Bravo. It's something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. It first kind of popped up into my head earlier this year during the back half of the latest season of Vanderpump Rules, where Lala Kent was really vilified for how she handled herself on and off the show. And I think it's up to interpretation whether you think that that was, you know, fair treatment or not. But I was of two minds about it. Of course, as a lover of Ariana Madix, much like a majority of the fandom, I was still in defense mode of the woman who was scorned so publicly and so brutally by not only her boyfriend of 9 years, but also by one of her best friends who was sleeping with him. So when Lala started to hear him out, when Lala called her up in that premiere episode, when Lala got coffee with Joe, and all of the other things that came in and around that, I was right there with a lot of the viewership who questioned her intentions. Why was she doing this? Wasn't this the woman who was out of her chair screaming at Sandoval in defense of Ariana at the last reunion? On the other hand, I understood what Lala was at least trying to do. She was trying to save the show by mixing it up, asking the unpopular opinion, going against the grain. Whenever the cast is everyone versus one person, the show suffers because of it. And she knew that. She's a longtime reality star. She's a vet. She's a pro. And I respected her for essentially sacrificing her own public favorability for the sake of the broader show and for us as viewers who want to watch something interesting. I may not have agreed with how she was handling herself, but I don't want to watch people who I totally agree with. You know, I want them to be controversial and maybe do the unpopular thing. But, you know, I think very few other people took it that way for a variety of reasons. And then this summer and into the fall, a similar thing has gone down with Tamra Judge on The Real Housewives of Orange County. She came into this season hot against her former best friend, Shannon Bedore, at the lowest point in her life, and the fandom is livid about it. There's the Alexis and John Jansen factor. There's the drinking factor. There's all of the history they have together. So you can't take their dynamic in a vacuum, but the audience kind of is. And that's for a variety of reasons as well. Both Lala and Tamra are examples of Bravo stars who were willing to be their show's villain, to stir the pot, to throw information out there, call people out, and try to create compelling TV. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But I thought that the intense pushback from the audience this year was a notable change from years and seasons past. Obviously, there's always been feedback from the viewers, but these two cases in particular felt similar to me, and they felt there was something new about it. Had something shifted in the culture, you know, in what audience tolerate and why? Is it a newer contingent of the audience that is impacting this feeling? The increased influence of social media on the shows we watch and how women operate on the shows because of it? How does this fit in with past examples of villains like Lisa Rinna, like Danielle Staub, like Sashi Schroeder? I had all of these questions swirling around in my head, and I wanted to talk to somebody who really knows their shit about all of them. So I reached out to perennial Bravo expert Brian Moylan to come on the show and analyze this idea with me. We had a really fruitful discussion about it, and I think you'll really enjoy our chat. We got into stan culture, we got into classic examples of reality TV villains, we got into obviously the Tamra and Lala examples, but we also brought up Monica Garcia and Teresa Giudice and different people that kind of fit into this mold. And again, I think you'll really, really enjoy it. So keep listening for my discussion with Brian Moylan about this precarious moment for reality TV villains and the slippery slope that we're on right now. Check out his writing at Vulture. I've linked his awesome newsletter in the show notes if you want to subscribe to that. It comes out once every other week. And please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this right now. I want to gab. Okay, today we're gabbing with Brian Moylan, Vulture's recapper extraordinaire, preeminent Bravo expert, one of the best in the biz. And as I mentioned in a recent episode, I've been thinking a lot lately about sort of the state of the reality TV villain and sort of the importance of respecting our villains, but also I feel like we're in an age of like increasing intolerance for villainous behavior on TV. And so those are kind of in conflict with one another. So Brian, to me, felt like the best person to bring on and to discuss this topic. He knows this world so well. So Brian, thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm good. And I feel like, you know, as an Ursula the Sea Witch, I have a villainous streak in me. So
of the self-proclaimed Ursula. Okay.
Self-proclaimed Ursula. So you poor unfortunate souls, get ready.
No, but I mean, like, you are somebody who's not afraid to say an unpopular opinion and to go against the grain in this environment that can sometimes be not forgiving about that kind of opinion, you know?
No, absolutely. And I feel like it's weird that, you know, I don't like to get too political,
right,
you know, in public, but it's gotten to this place where, you know, politics and reality TV have gotten the same place where it's like, if you don't like the same person I like, then I hate you and I'm going to say terrible things about you. But like, at the end of the day, we all love the same stupid thing. So yeah. Like, why can't we remember that? And like, even if,
so true,
you know, you like Erica Jane and I hate Erica, it's probably the other way around. Even though you hate Erica Jane and I like Erica Jane, doesn't mean you need to like call me terrible names or whatever the hell. It just means like
we have different opinions.
You know, we like different things.
Yeah, that's my opinion. Exactly. To point
that's
villain.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I do love about the fandom, Housewives especially, is that, you know, I like it when we can have kind of good natured debates about like, she's my favorite, she's my least favorite, you know, whatever. Because for every housewife, there's people that love them and there's people that hate them, except for maybe Teddy Mellencamp, who I've never met someone who likes her. But
except you wrote about it recently in your great newsletter where you gave me a really unwell shout out. But you mentioned that when Carlos King was on this show, he advocated for her to come back. And I don't think it was because he necessarily loves her, I think, or maybe he does.
Right.
But I think it was more from like a sort of a utility standpoint. You know what I mean? In terms of, I think that Teddy is somebody who probably, if she came back to a show like Beverly Hills, she could play the villain role. You know, she would be unafraid to do that.
Well, and I feel like since her podcast era,
yeah,
he's become sort of a Bravo troublemaker,
yeah,
in a way that I love, that she never was on the show. And yeah, so I would be here for like,
okay,
villain. Like when she showed up and was like, welcome Housewives and Vicky, I was like,
I mean, it was a great moment. You know, it really was.
Best thing she ever did on screen. I mean,
yeah, it's almost like she'd be good as like a troublemaking friend of, like, I don't need too much of her, but, you know, yeah, stir it up enough. Yeah, totally. All right. So yeah, before we jump into the big kind of like kind of issue facing villains right now, what in your mind does it mean to be a reality TV villain? And why is it important to a show, particularly a Bravo show, to have one?
I think the villain is typically a I'm not afraid to make friends type reality television person. I mean, going back to like Richard Hatch, where,
totally,
you know, if you rewatch the first season of Survivor, everybody's like, oh, Richard's playing the game and we just want to be out here and experience blah, blah, blah. And Richard's saying, no, I'm here to win. I have a goal in mind and I'm going to do it. And so I think it's someone who goes against the grain a bit, says unpopular things. And also in terms of housewives, kind of someone who is pushing the story along in a certain way and maybe courting conflict or setting up conflict amongst other people in a way that is going to pay off her fans. Right. Like rather than, you know, there's definitely those people who get mad, but are generally, you know, kind of nice.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And like, and this is not a Bravo, but like I watch Big Brother still after all these years. And like, there's a bad trend. There's a trend on that show where like people want to vote with the house. They don't want to vote kind of against the queen. And like, that's sort of, I think, indicative of this larger sort of trend in reality TV. When you hear reality TV, TV villain, when you hear that, that label, who jumps to your mind from Bravo, from any period?
Oh, that, I mean, Lisa Rinna, great villain. Tamara Judge, great villain. Leanne Locken, excellent villain. Slightly racist, but you
problematic
know.
For sure, no question. But when she was good, she a great did villain. Her job. Yeah.
Yeah. Jax Taylor, you know, Stassi Schroeder. I'm trying to Lindsay Hubbard, great villain. The people who are quick to act.
They're kind of lightning. They're lightning rods, you know?
Yes. 100%.
All those people.
And I think that a lot of times the villains are taking an unpopular stance. Mm-hmm. But then I also think that there is a way for someone to fight that is villainous, though they're often right. I like to call it Brandy Glanville disease after Brandy Glanville, because like that season when she showed up and she's on crutches and the Richard sisters are being terrible to her, like she's right. Like they're being awful to her. And so, but she's standing up for herself by being like, you're a fucking cunt on meth, which is villainous behavior.
Next question.
So,
yeah. And I think that an important thing in that thing that you just mentioned is like, there is still an element of sort of wanting to root for them, right? Like they're villainous and they go against the grain, but they haven't completely lost you, right? Like there's still like something in them that's like, you want them to succeed in some way.
Yeah. And I appreciate their craft in the reality television arts and sciences. You know, it's like, I would never do that. I would not want to be friends with you, but I respect that you are here keeping us entertained by creating conflict and crazy dynamics amongst your castmates.
For sure. So I alluded to this when I reached out to you also at the beginning of this episode, that I feel like the tides are kind of turning on this kind of character, on this kind of personality.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a tide shift when it comes to how people take reality TV villains, particularly on Bravo? And sort of when did you first start noticing it, if you have?
Well, I feel like in general, I want to say I don't like the social media trend that has been happening for a while, but I'm seeing more and more of the, if you don't like Erika Jayne, let's say you're on Twitter going, you're a fucking cunt. You should kill yourself. Your family's ugly. You're horrible. It's like, you know, I think part like of the reason we have and love reality shows is so that we can have people to gossip about, right? And you should do that like a normal person and not tag them and do it behind their back. Like,
no tagging.
Call Erica a cunt all you like, but don't tag her. Don't say it to her face. Say it behind her back like a human.
Say it on a podcast for like a normal person. Yeah.
Exactly. Erica's not listening. I also don't think she's a cunt. But anyway.
Me neither.
So I don't like that general trend of people talking poorly. But I also think, there's this thing where if fans are saying, oh, Tamara needs to be fired because she's so mean. And yes, I do think Tamara is often mean and she's never loyal. But like Carlos said on your podcast about bringing her back, you needed her to be that force multiplier to keep the story happening, to keep it chugging along. And so if you were to fire all the people you didn't like, the show would just be like goody-goody sitting around telling each other how pretty they are. And that's not...
And selling their products.
What we signed
exactly.
up for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we kind of need that. And so I think that doesn't mean a villain should never be fired. And I am happy to talk to you about when and why they should be.
Yeah.
But I don't think the reaction should be because I don't like this person, they should be fired. I think the reaction should be, you know, that more like I love to hate them.
Right. Right. And I also feel like part of the I don't like this person or they're too mean and they should be fired. Part of that is like this. Also a tension between what is sort of acceptable behavior in real life and acceptable behavior on a reality show. And those things, those Absolutely. Two things are not the same. Those two things are very different. Yes. And yeah. I don't know if that's like a newer casual fan who sort of brought that sort of sentiment. Cause I do think that like a big number of people were sort of injected into this viewership and fan base in the pandemic. And they aren't as like, I don't know, well-read when it comes to the Bravo back catalog, yeah. you know? And like, I do think that like there's been within that, there's something about like a newer viewer who has a lower tolerance for the bad behavior in some weird way, you know?
No. Yeah. And I also think that there's a difference, you know, with me and you who I've been watching Housewives in real time since the beginning. Like
exactly.
I've never binged a season of Housewives in the way that I have binged other reality shows. And I think that when you binge and you're watching Ramona season after season after season being terrible, you're like, I hate this
it's
lady.
Like, yeah, it's like the tension's like rising and rising and rising in the tank and then you just blow. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That makes
Whereas
sense.
Whereas we got like, Ramona drives me crazy and the next season comes back, you're like, maybe she won't be as bad.
Right.
And we also grow with her. We realize how she's a part of the whole thing. And I think that perspective is different. And I hope that as these fans who had binged everything and are now caught up will start to feel
mellow out
kind of a similar way that we do. Yeah.
Right. Totally. So let's get back to the point you said about like, there is a point when somebody maybe should be fired or they should be put on pause if they're the villain. And I think my understanding of something like that is like you look at somebody like Lisa Rinna probably. And it's like,
yeah,
she was so good for so long until her last maybe season and a half, two seasons where she maybe overstepped or maybe got in the muck too much. And she needed some perspective. I think that kind of person needs perspective. They need a break.
Yes.
They need some fresh air, touch some grass, and then maybe return in a couple of years. That's sort of how I view that. But in your mind, what's the distinction between when a villain should be kept around and when they should be let go or put on pause?
So I think that Lisa Rinna is a great, like you just summed it up perfectly in the case of Lisa Rinna. I think that there are some villains who kind of lose the plot, or in Lisa's case, kind of paint themselves into a corner a little bit.
Right.
And it started to get inauthentic. Like you could see her producing. And so I think that when the villainous person is making stuff up or calling on certain emotions that may not really be there, that's a good case for them to get fired. I think there's another case where they're so villainous, they lose everybody. And I'm thinking of a Danielle Staub.
Sure.
You know, like season two, like where she pissed everybody off so much, she couldn't film with anybody. Monica Garcia.
Yeah.
You know, I know there are a lot of people who want her to come back, but if she came back, it would have been...
There's no anchor.
Just everyone
cast.
Against Monica the whole season, and we would have hated it. And also, I think that there's something about the way that people fight. And I'm thinking of someone like Kelly Dodd, great villain.
Yeah.
Also Monica, where too much going low. Candace Dillard Bassett, same thing. When you're like calling people ugly, calling people fat, being juvenile.
Just cutting to the bone.
Fun of people's looks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that's too much. And now I would like to make my case for why Teresa Giudice should be fired.
Okay, go for it.
I think she's a great villain. She's given us a lot. But I feel like we've gotten to a place where she won't let the show progress. Like, her villainy is keeping everybody down because she can't handle anyone disagreeing with her. She can't move on from anything. So we're just relitigating the same stories over and over again. She fights down and dirty. So she brings everyone down to her level where she's just calling names. And I feel like it gets to a point where she's so stuck on Melissa and all this other bullshit that like, it can't move forward. And I think the same thing was happening a little bit with Lisa Rinna, where she couldn't let go. And that's why I think Tamra Judge is such a good villain, because she always has an ally. She, you know, and she's not loyal to anybody, but she always has someone who's liking her at that moment. And she stays in the show. And it's not always about her drama. It's sometimes about her facilitating other people's drama.
I think a lot of the time it actually is that latter one, especially in the past two seasons. It's her bringing things up. It's her spreading the information. It's her calling things out, which is great. Yes. But it also deflects anything from her. And I think that's actually something that we've seen play. We'll get to Tamra actually a little bit, but like that's something we're seeing play out off the show too, with the Vicky stuff, like with and how Vicky's sort of attacking her with her kids. Like that hasn't happened on the show because Tamra's been able to deflect on the show. But let's circle back to Tamra. Yes. So basically, you know, when I think the reason why it's sort of percolating now in my head so intensely is because we've had two really big examples of this issue this year. And the first one was with Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules, I think. And, you know, we don't have to relitigate what this season of Vanderpump Rules was, but it was going to be a really boring, staid season where nobody was sort of like bringing Sandoval in. Nobody was questioning anything. It was just going to be about like the aftermath, and we're all here for Ariana, which is great. And I think that's probably in real life what the situation would have been. But on a show, you need somebody who is going to maybe hear Sandoval out, or maybe ask the tough question, or maybe, you know, call out something about Ariana and Katie, whether it's deserved or not. You know, like you need that person mixing it up. And obviously, when Lala started doing that this season, it was really controversial. People did not take it well. She went off social media for a while, and like she couldn't really handle the heat, which was really intense, that was being directed at her.
Yeah.
So what did you make of the whole Lala situation? And like, did the punishment match the crime in terms of the reaction to her? Or what did you make of all of that sort of with some space?
I think that especially at that end of the season when she says that thing about Ariana's Beyonce or, you know, whatever, like, I think that Lala was the one brave enough to say what a lot of people on that show were probably thinking and what some in the fandom were thinking about Ariana, too. And yeah, I don't think the punishment fit that. I think that I always try to understand a little bit where they're coming from.
Totally.
You know, and like assume that all the housewives are right. And so like, okay, if in Lala's mind, she's right, why is she right? And how is she seeing that? And I think that from Lala's point of view, I think it does make a lot of sense. And like you said, she's keeping the show humming. She's having lunch with Joe. She's hanging out with Schwartz. She's doing the things that nobody else wanted to do to keep it going as an enterprise. And I think that we needed a Lala to do that. I think that my problem sometimes with Lala specifically is she doesn't seem to have maybe a backbone, a strong word, a moral compass is another. She doesn't seem to have like a guiding principle.
She flip-flops on how she's
to kind of like fit however she feels in the moment. And I think that if you see someone like Lisa Rinna, who did a great job of it for real time, like she was always like, here, you know, it made sense. Like, here's my MO. Here's how I feel about things. Own it, own it, own it. And like, Lala doesn't seem to have a philosophy of how one should behave on a reality show in the same way that some other great villains do.
Totally. Yeah. I feel like, a big thing with Lala was that basically they were like recent examples and receipts of her thinking the exact opposite way as what she was saying on the show and on Amazon Lives and wherever else she was saying it.
Yeah.
And it was contradictory, you know? And so I think that, I think that's a really good point. And that's sort of why people took issue with it sort of. Yeah. And I think sort of to defend her a little bit, it was sort of like, we know now that Alex Baskin, the executive producer of the show, had like held this meeting midway through the season where he basically was like, you guys got to mix it up more. You guys got to like, the season's going to be bad. Part of the reason why she did that was because her boss was essentially telling her to do that, you know? And so again, did she take it too far? Probably. Did she go the right route? Probably not. But She was doing her job. She was doing her job, you know?
No. And I think that we see that in a lot of great villains. They want to keep the lights on. They want to keep that paycheck coming. They want to keep the show humming. And so they're willing to kind of put themselves second in a way to, you know, keep the thing going. And and I get it. Lala's got babies to feed. You know,
totally. And so, I think also the other aspect of that was that she was literally going against like the people's princess and Ariana Maddox. Like she was going against like the ultimate person that people feel defensive of. And so it was just like too soon for that to be happening, basically, I feel.
Yeah. But I also think that, you know, maybe part of what's going on with villains is maybe the inverse of stan culture, where I feel like Ariana is received by some people like how the Barbs view Nicki Minaj. She could do no wrong. Totally. And we will defend her to the death. And if you're against her, then I'm going to dox you and send the SWAT team to your house, you know, go crazy on you. And I think that Lala ran afoul of that with Ariana.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that's exactly what it is, honestly.
Yeah.
All right. So the other big example, Brian, this year has been Tamra. We're watching it play out right now where, you know, she's not just distanced herself from Shannon and sort of put a pause on that friendship, but she's also really kind of objectively kicking her while she's down, not just by, you know, calling out her still drinking and sort of taunting her with this DUI stuff, but also because she's aligned with Alexis. She's not kind of going out of her way to speak out against John suing her for $75,000. Like she's kicking her while this is happening, and it's not the best look, and fans are really riled up about it. Thoughts on how Tamra's carrying herself this season?
I think Tamra's a great villain. I've been doing a bit of an OC rewatch, and so I've been seeing, you know, it's like you think about Tamra's best friends being Vicky and Shannon, and half of the season, they fucking hate each other. So it seems like, you know, a little bit of Tamra, same old Tamra. But I do think at some point she needs to have a little bit of loyalty to somebody or something. And I think we're not really seeing that. And I think she's really picked the wrong horse with Alexis here. But I think that this season is really kind of strange because John and Alexis are being so terrible to Shannon that we feel bad for Shannon. So we forget all the terrible things about Shannon. And I think Tamra's reminding us of that, but because she seems in league with John and Alexis, we're like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
So
I think there's a mystery that happened because I think that when Shannon first got the DUI, people like weren't really in her corner about it. They were, she's kind of the butt of the joke. And so I think Tamra probably saw that. And she saw some probably vocal people asking for Alexis to come back. And she sort of just rode that. She rode that wave, and unfortunately, a bigger wave was coming from the other side, you know, and she's...
But also, Tamra knows that everybody needs an ally, and if it was just everyone against Alexis,
you're right,
it wouldn't be fun. It wouldn't be interesting. And so, for Tamra to take that side, I think is good. But we've also... The funny thing to me about Tamra this season is less between Shannon and Alexis, and more the Katie Heather thing, which is an annoying fight. But Tamra is saying, Gina set her up, because the way Tamra plays Housewives, Tamra would have set her up.
Like, she's
Tamra's
Gina.
Projecting what she would have done onto Gina. And I don't think Gina set her up, but
I don't think so either.
Tamra thinks Gina set her up because that's how Tamra plays the game.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out.
I'll be curious next season if Tamra comes back, how she like handles it. But I feel like she's used to being unpopular enough that she's not going to care that much.
One thing that's obviously also still playing out is sort of off camera. She's been in bed for 2 weeks with a peeling face.
Oh, my God. Yeah. With that crusty ass face.
There was this moment earlier this week or last week where Vicky basically said she called her out about being estranged from her daughter and her, you know, this complicated relationship with her kids and sort of picking the show over her children. And Tamra, that clearly hit a nerve with Tamra. And I understand why. It was a savage thing to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get this tearful moment from Tamra. She's like, take my spot on the show. I don't even want it. Whatever. It's not worth it. And to me, like, that's something that we haven't really seen on the show since Tamra's return is like somebody calling out tough things from her life. You know, she's able, as I said earlier, sort of to deflect onto other people and just sort of the spotlight is shifted.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah. Vicky's willing to call that out because Vicky, for a variety of reasons, probably because they have history, because Vicky wants to be back on the show. There's a million reasons, but Vicky's willing to do something that other people are not willing to do with Tamra, because people aren't really calling out anything in Tamra's life on the show, which I think is really interesting. Like, why not hit her there? Because they aren't the villain?
Well, but I feel like when you're at a level of like Tamra or even Heather Dubrow, they're all a little afraid of her.
Right.
And they don't want to mess with Tamra because they don't want Tamra coming for them. So, you know, let's leave Tamra alone. Let's leave Heather alone, because I mean, I'm sorry, but as surely as Lea Michele cannot read, Heather Dubrow called those paparazzi. I'm telling you, like, sorry, Heather.
What an analogy. What an analogy.
So yeah,
but it's like I'm watching it and I'm like, well, why isn't Shannon, who is literally getting torn to pieces by Tamra, why doesn't she hit her there? You know, why doesn't she go out? Because she's such an, I guess she just like doesn't have, she's not thinking straight right now. But it's like, you want, when Tamra's already coming for you, like, what do you have to lose?
Well, I think maybe the distinction we're trying to make here in like villains and otherwise is like a reactive housewife versus a proactive housewife.
So true.
Where Shannon is always reacting to what someone else has done to her. Shannon's always the victim. You did this to me and I'm going to say something about it. It's not in her natural response to go after someone in the way that it is Tamra's. Whereas Tamra will go after somebody and be like reactive and like, you know, naked wasted and all that, where, you know, Tamra is like doing it. And so maybe that's the distinction too, because she's really the only one on the cast who will do that. Like Emily, Gina, Heather, Jen, they're not
in their
attackers.
Nature. No, yeah. No. So, you know, we see this intense reaction. People are calling for her to be fired for how she's treating. Like, it's just, people are really on the Tamra hate train right now because of her behavior on the show. And I feel like there are a variety of ways in which she can take her next step, you know, and I feel like there's a big opportunity for her coming up at the reunion for her to kind of use that, which is a big utility at her expense. There's this reunion where you've watched the show, you've watched how you've acted, you've watched fan reactions, you've seen what everybody else is saying. One of the things that Tamra could do to maybe curry some favor back or show some remorse, show some compassion, issue an apology, extend an olive branch, however you want to say it, at the reunion. And I feel like that's something that Lala didn't do, which was to her detriment.
Correct. 100%. And I'm thinking also of Candace's last reunion where they're like, any regrets? Would you have done it differently? Nope. I would have said all those terrible things all over again.
Right. And same with Monica.
Right. Then I'm thinking of that reunion where the Trace Amigas decided to forgive each other.
Uh-huh.
And then it's like, you know, you're back to the races. You know, we say this all the time. It's about conflict and conflict resolution. And if you won't resolve the conflict, you can't have the show. And I think that's what Tamra is great at, is apologizing, being over it, putting last season in last season and moving forward with people and doing it in as genuine a way as Tamra can do. And I think that's what makes, she's been on the show for, 16 out of 18 seasons or something, you know, whatever, 14, something like that. She's been on a long time. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah. And the other sort of way that it, I think, can affect somebody's behavior is, like, I'm thinking about Giselle, who we just saw the Potomac trailer, and she, I think, has been a really good instigator on Potomac over the years. She's somebody who has lost, but she's also somebody who's lost a lot of the fan base in terms of, I think, how she treated Candace. The Candace loyalists really don't like Giselle. And you know, in the trailer, there's not that much Giselle. Like, she's not really not really stirring the pot. She's not really, I think we're going to see a Giselle who sort of took a slight step back from that behavior. And that's the other way the reaction can really, I think, impact the show, is like, then we get somebody who's like too afraid to go there. at risk of getting even more hateful comments, at risk of, you know, alienating even more people. And that, I also hate to see that, because then the person's not being their natural, you know, their natural self.
Yes. Inauthenticity is the enemy of these shows. And so when you get people double thinking, what are they going to say about this on Twitter? What are the fans going to think? They're inauthentic and it's not as good. And you see this the most on Beverly Hills, where they're really afraid to tussle because they're always worried about what everybody thinks. And then you end up with Dorit, who might have been separated from her husband for the past like 19 seasons and like won't talk about it because she's afraid of how it's going to come off, you know? And that's not what we want. We want you being real and being honest and out there. Us calling them out, you know, and I'm not saying you should say what Tamara's doing is right.
Of course not. No, that's not. No, it's that's not it.
There's a way to have these discussions and talk about these things and be critical without it being, you should be fired, you should lose your job, I hate you.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And then that's sort of what the crux of my worry is, as somebody who loves and watches these shows, is like, these people are human beings. So when they're receiving like all this insane reaction from fans which a lot of it crosses a line, I'm worried that at some point it's just going to scare all these people off the show. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, absolutely.
Tamara Judge is somebody with a really thick skin. Giselle Bryant, really thick skin. Lala Kent sometimes has a really thick skin. Rinna had a pretty thick skin, I would say, you know?
Yep.
But these things clearly hit a nerve with people, even with really thick skins. And there's only so much somebody can take, I think, before it's like, is this even, I mean, it's worth it for the paycheck, but is it worth it for like, on a human level of like, can I handle this emotionally?
Well, and I also think that it makes the pool of people who would be great housewives smaller,
right?
Because they see how fans treat them. And especially on a show like Beverly Hills, where you might attract someone with some level of fame, you know, like, why would Denise Richards come back on the show knowing that everyone is going to talk so much shit? Like, would we ever get another person of Denise Richards infamy
totally
on the show, knowing they're walking into this viper's nest, you know? And so I think that fans think they're helping the show, but I don't know that they always are.
Right. And then I think one of the effects of getting, and I actually like the reboot, but like the Roni reboot doesn't really have anybody who's willing to really go there. You know, I think that's an issue.
Yes.
And that's why Jenna Lyons is comfortable
worried
being there. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's how Rebecca Minkoff can be there and probably be questioned maybe one time about being a Scientologist this season. You know, it's like,
right.
If Lala Kent was on that cast, she'd be calling that out from episode two. You know what I mean?
100%. Yes. And I think that my biggest problem with the Roni reboot is that there's no villain, really.
There's no biting nature to it. Yeah.
No, there's people we don't like, but no one's willing to get dirty enough. And two, it's not that funny.
Yeah.
To be a little bit funnier. I'm hoping we'll get that from the next season.
Yeah, we'll see. I always try to be cautiously optimistic when the trailer doesn't really do it for me. But you compare that to the Salt Lake City trailer, it's a little bit night and day. So,
yeah, 100%. So, and I watched the premiere of Salt Lake and it's
good.
Real good.
Really good.
Yeah,
really good.
So I'm excited for all of us. The thing about Salt Lake, though, is it might be all villains.
I was just the wheels were turning in my head about that, because I was like, the thing about that cast is that they have, I guess, five, if you include Mary, the kind of five OG people that are still on that show.
Yeah.
Every single one of them is willing to say, to call shit out. All of them are. All of them are different moments.
Yeah.
And that's a unique cast. That's a unique cast.
Yeah. And every season, who is friends and who is enemies is different. Mm-hmm. And but it also feels organic to the situation that they're in. And so I think that's why Salt Lake continues to be so good.
Right. Totally. Well, Brian, any lingering thoughts on reality TV villains? I feel like we've really unpacked this, but like, it's definitely an issue. It's definitely like a problem to be sort of watched, I think.
Do you have any like non-housewives, non-Bravo villains that you're a big fan of?
Yes, but most of them are from kind of back in the day, you know, like I think about like on Big Brother, like
Evil Dick.
Evil Dick, Rachel Riley to me is an amazing villain.
Oh, Rachel Riley.
You know, like Janelle had some great villain qualities to her, I think.
Yes.
I'm trying to think who was even like on. I mean, the ultimate villain is New York Tiffany Pollard. Like she was fantastic. Yes. Who else is there? I'm trying to think of Survivor people who are really good at it. But I mean, Richard Hatch was amazing. But
yeah. But then there was like Russell Hantz was like too much.
Right.
Totally. He was like too evil.
Sandra's a good villain.
But like Sandra.
Yeah.
Excellent villain.
And I think the thing about like a show like Survivor or Big Brother is like you can be a villain for, what is it, 3 weeks, 4 weeks that they film for, and then you're not on TV anymore. You don't have to come back. You don't have to like worry about having to come back and be well liked. It's like you're one and done. I think that does make the stakes a little lower in terms of like what you're risking by alienating people, essentially, right?
But and I also think that on the show, on shows like Big Brother or Survivor or The Challenge or any of those competition shows, there's a goal. So if you're a villain and you win or you get to the end or you do well, it's showing how your villainy is paying off.
You'll do
whatever
it takes.
On Housewives, there is no winning, though there is, but like it's a bit more diffuse. So I think that that's why fans have a harder time with villains on shows like that.
Yeah, it was like when in the Beverly Hills season when Rinna, you know, sacrificed herself at the altar to make sure that Denise Richards admitted to hooking up with Brandi Glanville. I was like, why do you care so much about this? You know, like, and it was because she was lying, but or she thought she was lying, but whatever it was. But like, I'm like, there's no prize at outing Denise Richards for hooking up with a woman. You know, it's like, what is that? That's where to me actually Rinna crossed a line and kind of that's where she needed a break. But that's a good example of that, I guess.
Yeah. But Evil Dick's trying to win $500,000.
Period.
So like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. I do it too. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a million, but...
Oh my God.
Would you ever go on like a Big Brother, a Survivor, one of those?
I think Big Brother would have the most appeal to me.
Interesting.
I don't do well. Yeah. I don't do well in the outdoors and like not having a lot, I can be a picky eater. So I don't know if Survivor would be the best environment for me. But I think Big Brother could be good. I think I could do the social game well and be, you know, and I get bored as fuck, but like.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. There's something about it that would have the most appeal. What about you?
I would go on Survivor in a heartbeat. I think that I do not also am a picky eater and don't do well with the outdoors, but I think that would be part of the fun. Like if I could conquer Survivor, I could do anything.
Sure.
Also, if I was on Big Brother, the 24 hour, I have maybe sometimes an edgy sense of humor. And I don't know that the 24 hour
you might come out canceled.
Yeah, that's what I
that's a scary part about it for sure. That's like the whole like the entire time you're doing a challenge of like let me make sure I'm watching my words the entire time, basically.
Yeah, right. Yeah. For like months. But like I don't think I could sink myself on Survivor with the amount I would be in the edit.
No.
I think I would be fine.
Yeah. The other one, Amazing Race would be fun too, but you'd have to have the right part.
Absolutely.
Like I think that like certain people, if I was paired with them, like we would just hate each other by the end. And that's a big risk, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like my husband and I, it might be the end of our relationship.
We got it. Okay, so together. Don't go on Amazing Race. Don't go on Amazing Race.
No, we're not. Okay. At least not with him. I'll go with my mom. That would be like way more fun. She has a cane. She's real slow. We'd lose.
Stop. I mean. Well, Brian, thanks for doing this. This is
my pleasure.
Great convo. So fun. Always.
Thanks.
Always with you. What do you have to plug? Do your blogs, working with your newsletter. I love your newsletter, your recap, everything.
So I'm currently recapping OC and I'll be doing New York when that's back on Vulture.com. Okay. Those go right up. And I'm doing Survivor, which I'm excited to do a little non-Housewives.
Yeah.
And so those go up on Vulture right after the episodes. And then you can sign up for my newsletter, the Housewives Institute Bulletin at Vulture.com/Housewives. That comes out every 2 weeks. The next one is about Mormon wives versus Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
People listen to this know that I can't shut up about that show. So I'm excited to read that. That's going to be a good one.
That's why I follow you on Twitter, girl. I know.
Brian, thanks for doing this. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gib on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.